You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. It is Wednesday, which means it's time to talk our state's history, thanks to our partners at the Michigan History Center. This coming Sunday is, of course, Easter Sunday. And along with baskets of chocolate bunnies and Easter eggs, it's a pretty safe bet a spiral-cut ham is going to make an appearance in many homes. As you slice away at that ham, we need to give a hat tip to the Detroit ham salesman who invented the spiral-cut ham. Kim Severson of the New York Times wrote about the ham world's equivalent of pop music, quoting here, the spiral-cut ham, sweet, approachable, and easy to eat. Kim is with us now. Good to have you on Stateside, and I understand you've spent time in Michigan before heading off to the New York Times. So welcome back to the air in Michigan.
Oh, very glad to be here. Thanks.
What got you thinking, let's trace the rise of the spiral-cut ham?
Well, I've been a food writer for many, many years, and as you know, the holidays come around, Thanksgiving, Easter, Christmas, Passover, and as a food writer, you have to come up with some interesting new thing to write about each year. And I recently moved to the American South. I live in Atlanta. I still write for the New York Times, but I'm their national food correspondent now. And in Atlanta, everyone eats spiral-cut hams, and honey-baked hams specifically. So it was my turn in the Easter barrel, as it were, and my editor said, well, what do you got for Easter this year? And I said, I am fascinated with honey-baked hams. I don't know why everybody here has them. I didn't really know a lot about them. I said, we are going deep on spiral-cut hams. And I just was fascinated. And then I came across this great Detroit angle.
So before we get to that angle, it's probably good for us to have a minute or so of Ham 101 so we can understand how the spiral-cut ham came to be. So give us a quick reminder of the differences between a fresh ham, a country ham, a city ham, and then the spiral-cut.
Okay, so the ham is, comes from a large cut of the pig. So you take that hindquarter ham cut, and you can bake it in the oven just like that. That's a fresh ham. It comes out more like a pork roast, really, if you bake it, than what a lot of us think of as ham in terms of, you know, that would be on your lunch meat sandwich. So that is the first step in the ham, the fresh cooked ham. If you take that ham and you brine it and possibly smoke it a little bit, within a few days, you've got what we call a city ham. It's basically a brined, a cured ham. So that's more the pinkish ham. Often they'll put some nitrates in it to give it that pinkish color. These hams are everything from the mass-produced, cheapest supermarket ham you could get, which is usually injected with water as well as brine, might not be put over smoke. The city ham can increase in quality. If you start with a pig that's got a good pedigree and you take some care with its brining and some smoking, then you've got a more elevated city ham that will cost more money. And there are a lot of small producers who are doing that with ham. Now, if you take that fresh ham, that fresh cut of pork, and you rub some salt and spice onto it, and you put it in over some smoke, and then you let it hang for 6, 8 months, a year or two, you have a country ham, and the water evaporates from that, the moisture evaporates from that ham, the salt cures the meat, and it gets a very complex and funky and lovely flavor. This is a really dense ham. This is, if you think about prosciutto or an Iberico ham from Spain, country hams are sort of the American version of that, and they're usually best sliced really thinly, put inside a biscuit, or you can, you know, do it as like charcuterie if you're at a fancy restaurant. And they can be very salty, and so some country hams end up fried and turned into breakfast with red-eye gravy.
Mm.
So that's your span of hams.
All right, so that brings us to this Detroit ham salesman.
Right. So in the 1930s, and there was a company that it was off on, I think it might have actually been Fenkel Road for fans who really want to get deep, but there was a honey-baked ham store, and it was not what we think of as honey-baked today. And there was a fellow who was a ham salesman, and at that time at drugstores, they had the soda fountains, and you would get a sandwich. And so his job was to go around and try to convince the soda fountain clerks to buy his brand of ham. And so his thing was that he would go and slice it into sandwiches and try to sell ham wherever he could. And a lot of it was the lunch counter trade.
Yes. And what was his name?
Oh, Harry Hohnsellaer. H-O-E-N-S-E-L-A-A-R.
Harry Hohnsellaer. So he's...
Yes. So Harry Hohnsellaer is just trying to make a living selling this ham. And he was kind of known for his knife skills, apparently. He could, you know, he'd go in with his ham and, you know, try to sell them and do food shows and take it around to the diners and the lunch counters. He thought there had to be a better way to demonstrate the ham so he could sell more ham. So his family says that one night he had a dream that there was a better way to slice the ham. So he used a tire jack and a pie tin and a piece of washing machine motor and a knife, and he fashioned the world's first spiral ham slicer. And the contraption sort of lifted, the blade was perpendicular. He'd put the ham standing upright on this plate, and he used this motor to kind of lift the ham as this oscillating blade sliced it. And it slices against the bone, so you, and as the ham moved up, you would get the spiral cut. Well, this just revolutionized his ham sales. Everybody wanted to come see the contraption. He perfected it, so he filed a couple of patents on it, one of which expired in the 1980s, the last one, and that's when the spiral-cut ham world exploded.
I love the way you described it, Kim. The spiral ham gold rush was on.
Yes, it was, because then everybody could buy one of these machines, and other companies started making them, and we had spiral-cut hams as we know it. Now, interestingly enough, the family that owned that original honey-baked ham store, the husband died, the wife took it over. She really didn't want to deal with it. So he, Harry Hohnseller, went back in the 50s and said, I'll tell you what, I'll buy the honey-baked ham store, and started to build this business. Now, there was a good 30 years between when he bought the ham store and when the patent expired. So for 30 years, he had a lock on spiral-cut hams.
Mm.
And he began to open ham stores regionally and expand them. He had four daughters. And as he got older, he divided up the country into four chunks, and each one got a territory. At the time, these were run more by their husbands than by them. But the honey-baked ham store, as we know it, grew out of that. And so now I think there are 440 or so honey-baked ham stores around the country. The granddaughter of one of his daughters ended up in charge of the company. There was some consolidation that happened and some squabbling in her family, and some of the families didn't really want to deal with it. So the one granddaughter consolidated it all. She moved headquarters to a suburb of Atlanta, Georgia. And the honey-baked ham store still maintains this almost iconic status among people. And it's very interesting when you go there. They hand-cut all the hams, and then they have people called master glazers who take this mixture of sugar and a little honey powder and some very kind of clove-scented spice and sprinkle it onto each ham, and then they have these blow torches, and they hand glaze every ham that goes through the store. Now, Christmas is the number one time.
Oh, yeah. And we here in Michigan, certainly in the Detroit area, where they used to have their headquarters, it used to be in Oakland County, but, the lines are long.
Yes. Now, I have a question. Somebody wrote to me after I did this story and said they don't like the honey-baked ham, but they like a spiral-cut ham, but they put a Werner's glaze on it. And I had never heard of that. But down in the South here, of course, dumping a can of Coca-Cola and some cloves onto a ham and baking it is one way to glaze it. But the Werner's glaze, I thought, what a Detroit-specific thing. Have you ever had a Werner glazed ham?
I have not, but I've heard of it. And you know, in Detroit, I mean, people use Werner's for everything.
As well, they
use it for medicine.
Yeah. I have great memories of Werner's floats as a kid.
Absolutely. And one final note on the ham. I know that you write in your story, which is really worth looking up at the New York Times website, because it's a great piece, how there was actually like ham espionage, that a mole came from a competitor to check out the Detroit equipment. And that's when he realized you had to have some sweet with that ham. It just didn't work if it didn't have some sweet.
Yes, it was a Vermont ham maker who wanted to get in on the spiral cut craze and see if it was worth it. They sent a man with a ham to Detroit. They liked the spiral cut. The guy came back and said, yeah, this will work, but you've got to have some sweet component to that ham. And the people in Vermont were proud of their smoked ham. They used corn cobs and a certain kind of sawdust to make this smoky flavor in their ham, and they did not want to pollute it with something sweet. Well, the spiral cut hams did not sell that year. The next year, they realized that the honey-baked people were onto something, so they developed a maple syrup glaze that they use, and now their spiral cuts are selling like crazy. But that funny combination of, we don't really think of meat and sweetness together that much, so the idea that you would have the sweet, sugary component to ham, now it's hard to think of something without it. You know, we put pineapple on hams, and we do lots of things to sweeten ham. But it was a marriage that certainly wasn't made by the honey-baked ham people, but was indeed popularized by them.
Well, it'll get you in the mood for that Easter spiral-cut ham, I'm going to tell you that. Kim Severson, her national food correspondent of the New York Times. And thanks to you, we now know that we can thank Detroit ham salesman Harry Hohnseller for this mainstay of our dinners. Kim, thanks. It was a blast to talk with you.
Oh, my pleasure. Another great thing to come out of Detroit. I love it.